Now, Terry, I notice you have a piece of amber with you. Tell me about it.
It's a piece of amber I got from my wife, Angela. Oh, I suppose it's about 20 years ago now, and I carry it with me all the time. The reason why I keep it is because there's a couple of small insects inside in it. Now, to see the insects, you really need a little binocular microscope or a hand lens, but you can definitely see them. But what amazes me is that these insects are about 160 million years old.
Yeah, but you better describe it now. We're on radio.
What is it? It's like a piece of jelly, toughened jelly or that, or old broken glass.
Oh, like glass sweets that you get.
That piece of glass that might have been smoothed by the sea, and it's quite small. It fits into the palm of your hand very easily. It's very nice, very tight, and very nice to touch. And when you look inside it, it is an amber colour, and there are some pieces of, I think, debris, maybe some plant leaves, but there are definitely some insect remains inside it. So it's just nice. It's just a lucky charm that I bring with me everywhere.
And can I ask, do you think it's original? Have you ever had it carbon dated? Or could you have such a thing carbon dated?
Well, you could, absolutely. And I know in the case of David Attenborough, he developed his interest in natural history through a piece of amber very, very similar to this.
Well, he told us on the programme, was it, back in 2006 when he was here to promote Planet Earth.
Yeah.
About what really sparked his interest in natural history. And it had to do with going around the countryside collecting fossils.
People have said to me, oh, you're a nasty, solitary little boy going around the countryside on your bicycle picking up bits of rock. And maybe I was. I don't know. I wasn't all that kind of misanthropic. But no, I certainly did spend a lot of time cycling around the countryside looking at rocks and looking at fossils. And of course, it's a very interesting thing to do. It teaches you an awful lot about the natural world, really, about the classification. And I'm very, very sorry these days that so many kids, you know, we've made it, I know it's essential, but we have made it against the law for kids to pick up bits and pieces. You can't take a bird's egg now, and you can't pluck a flower. And you, even if you picked up a feather, it's technically against the law. And that's the whole business of collecting is one of the basis of what makes naturalists and scientists, in my view.
David Attenborough explaining where his interest in the natural world began. Anyway, continue, Terry.
Yeah, David himself and his family, they received a present of a piece of amber from his adoptive sister, Marianne. She came to live with them. I think she came from Germany, and it was during the war.
Actually, a movie came out, I think it was about 2 years ago, called One Life, starring Anthony Hopkins, and he portrayed Sir Nicholas Winton, and he was the man who set up the Kinder Transport, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and that was a means of getting children out of Nazi Germany into England to live with families. And David Attenborough's family took two girls, as I understand it. At any rate, continue, Terry.
When they came to live in England, they often brought a piece, something valuable, or that they considered valuable, to the home. And she brought over this piece of amber, and it contained some insects in it. And that's how he developed his interest in natural history. And I know then years later, when he went on to make that documentary, The Amber Time Machine, he took that piece of amber with him, and he took it to the lab, and they used these very, very high-powered microscopes to look inside it, to see the insects that are present in it. So he has that. That's the one thing that he has kept all his life, and that really stimulated him to get into this field of natural history.
These things are extraordinary. Nature leaves these time capsules behind to tantalise us. It's like the footprints down in Valentia Island of the tetrapod, and the fossils that are dug up from time to time. And this is remarkable. Tree resin solidified, trapping insects inside it for all time. It is extraordinary.
And of course, when we think of fossils and paleontologists, probably the one person we think most of is Mary Anning. And I know she was a favourite of yours, Richard.
Yes, she was a favourite and remains. She was one of the most remarkable scientists. She had no formal training. Her father was a cabinet maker who fell from a cliff near Lyme Ridges.
Lyme Ridges, yeah.
And he had a sideline selling fossils, because that is the Jurassic Coast. is famous for its fossils. I've taken my grandchildren, we have friends over there, Barbara and I, and we go over and stay with them from time to time. And I took the kids over there with their little hammers, and they can go down onto the rocks and find fossils, mollusks and ammonites and things like that. It's a wonderful place. But Mary Anning, extraordinary, she shouldn't be with us, because according to her history, she was struck by lightning on the green at Lyme Regis. Her nurse was killed, but she survived. Isn't that a remarkable story? But anyway, she found the first ichthyosaurs, and she had this extraordinary skill. She was not just a finder. She was able to put the bones together, and she had an extraordinary intuition. The bones would be fragmented all over the place, a bone here and a bone there, but she was able to bring the jigsaw together and show what the original animal was like. Now, of course, she was excluded for being a woman from the scientific community, but after her death, she did get enormous tributes. But Mary Anning was a remarkable woman.
And she's remembered in that tongue twister, isn't she, Terry?
Yes. She sells seashells by the seashore.
Yeah, go on, continue.
No, that's a
no. Richard, go on.
But
she sells seashells on the seashore.
No, it's she sells seashells by the seashore. The shells she sells are seashells, I'm sure. So she sells seashells on the seashore, then I'm sure she sells seashore shells.
Oh my very God. Good.
Yeah, it is a tongue twister. God. Try doing it fast.
But she was an incredible woman too, because it wasn't just the ichthyosaurs. There was also animals like the plesiosaurs and that. Again, like you said, because she was a woman and she wasn't a scientist, she wasn't really accepted at the time. And it was sad that she died, I think, quite poor as well. They had the shop. The father died, like you mentioned. He was a cabinet maker, and they used to collect and sell these fossils. People would come from far and near to buy these fossils. But after the father died, I think they struggled. But they did receive some help. But sadly, it was a hard life she had. And even in her later years, she was out there on cold, wet days, particularly after storms, because that's when they were most likely to find these fossils along the coast there, the Dorset coast at Lyme Regis. But she is probably the one woman I tend to think of. She's probably the one scientist I tend to think of mostly when I think of paleontology.
And she was remarkable in all kinds of ways. She never lost her Dorset accent. She never.
Why is that remarkable, Richard?
Well, because people put
heavens
on airs.
You haven't lost your Limerick accent.
This is the most.
I haven't lost my Dublin accent. Terry hasn't lost his.
You have
that doesn't matter.
You have a nice RTE accent.
But she never moved down the road.
She never moved, Richard. So why
she travelled to London once in her life. That's as far as she went. And the great and the good came to her, and she was not intimidated by them. She was the most famous fossil hunter of all time, a most remarkable woman. But she maintained her roots, and she didn't put on airs and graces, which I think is wonderful.